All right, it's Lookout Landing Podcast, and I'm your host, Scott Weber. Today's guest is James Paxton, who's joining us from Minneapolis, Minnesota, where he's hanging out this offseason. James and I have a really good conversation talking about Scott Boras and what it's like to be a client of his, and what James has done in the offseason, and how he feels about Eric Wedge departing, what it was like when he got called up, and what he plans to work on in the future. Also his kind of theories on inning limits and pitch counts and things like that. Really interesting chat. Great interview. It's about 25 minutes long, so stick around and listen to it. And as always, thanks for listening.
This is the Lookout Landing Podcast. I'm Scott Weber, and I'm joined today by James Paxton. James, how are you, man?
Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. So you just said you're up in Minneapolis taking it easy in the offseason. How's everything been so far?
Everything's been great, you know, getting into my off-season workouts and doing yoga, body's feeling good, just keep it going until spring training rolls around.
When do you kind of start to ramp things up with your arm again, or are you just kind of taking it easy for a couple months before you start to do stuff like that?
Yeah, we just kind of take some time off and give our body a rest, and then I started workouts a couple weeks ago, and I'll probably start ramping up my throwing program in mid-December.
Okay. There's really not much of a break, is there?
No, not much. But, it's what we love to do, so it's all good.
Right on. You have any off-season plans other than that? Vacations or anything like that?
Not too much. I'm going to be here until mid-December and then back home in Vancouver for Christmas and then heading down to California to kind of get things ramped up with bullpens and long toss before spring training.
Right on. Who do you work with when you go down to California?
I actually work out at BSDI. It's Boras's sports training complex down there.
Right on, dude. Let me ask you this, because it was one of the things I wanted to talk about later, but I'm kind of curious to get your take just on Scott Boras. I feel like there's a lot of misconceptions about Boras, especially with fans. You know, a lot of fans, they can't stand him because they think that he's greedy and he's ruining the game and stuff like that. But the reality is that Boras is pretty much the best at what he does. I've always thought that and respected it, and even though it's frustrating sometimes as fans. I'm kind of curious as to kind of how accessible he is and what your relationship is with him, even though he's got so many clients.
Yeah, he has a lot of clients, but he has a lot of people below him in the Boras Corporation that take care of everybody. You might not get a whole bunch of one-on-one time with Scott Boras, but he's got all the all the amenities that you need, people to talk to, and all that kind of stuff. And when the important things come up, like negotiations and that kind of thing, obviously he's going to be the guy to take care of that stuff. And when I had my debut, he came down to he was in LA to see me, and when I went there the first time and got to chat with him for a little bit, so that was good.
That's cool. That's very cool. Tell me about that kind of opening debut. And I'm always fascinated to talk to everyone about the first time they come up and kind of talk about the moment, you know, when you get the call and what that feeling's like. So, I mean, where were you when you got the call?
I was actually pitching at the time in Tacoma, and they pulled me after the second inning, I believe it was, and pulled me aside and told me that I was going up, and, just started giving everybody hugs and everything, and, it was super exciting. The cool part was, too, is that I actually had my parents down in Tacoma watching the game that day. And my aunt and uncle were there also, so that was pretty special.
That's great. So you didn't have to make the phone call. You could just walk up into the stands.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right on. So you get the call, and then you go and you pack your stuff up, and you head out to Seattle. Now, there's probably a bunch of logistics that you have to take care of, too, with your stuff in your house or your apartment or wherever you are. Are you leaving stuff, temporary housing in Seattle? Are you making the commute every day?
I actually was living somewhere in between Tacoma and Seattle, so I didn't have to move. I just stayed where I was, and it was only like a 20-minute drive to the ballpark, so it worked out great.
All right. So how cool is it for you then to kind of be up at the end of the year with Taiwan and kind of have the two of you had kind of been on a, different ages, but still kind of similar paths, played on different levels together, and you guys get to be up there together?
you know, it was awesome. It was great having him and also Brandon Maurer, you know, yeah. The three of us spent a lot of time together and played a lot of baseball with each other the last few years. So, you know, to be able to have Maurer up there for both Taiwan and I to kind of, you know, ask questions because he's been there for, you know, a little bit and kind of knew how things worked. It was really fun to be with those guys and be up there doing that.
When you guys are in the locker room together, and obviously Brandon's been there the whole year, but mm-hmm. you and Ty are new, who are the kind of guys in the locker room that really helped you out and kind of showed you the ropes and maybe gave you some advice, provided the leadership?
You know, you always just kind of watch Felix. You know, he kind of, you know, he does everything the right way. You're just kind of watching a guy like him. But I didn't actually talk to Felix a whole lot, a little bit. But talking to Raul Abanez a little bit on the bench, he was great, you know, helping me out and stuff. And, you know, guys like Charlie Furbush and Tom Wilhelmson would come up and talk to me and kind of help me out. And it was a good situation.
Good situation to be in. Of course, now you're going to be going into the next season with some change with the departure of Eric Wedge. Are you bummed about that?
You know, I didn't get a great opportunity to really get to know him in my time there. Mm-hmm. I only spent little stints in spring training and, you know, a little bit of time I had up there this year. And he seemed great. You know, I really liked him. But, you know, it's baseball and it's business and things are going to happen and we'll see who Seattle brings in to coach us next year.
Yeah. What are the kind of the things that you look for in a manager, your ideal qualities for a manager? I think as fans, you know, sometimes we can look at bullpen management or pinch hitting or platooning or things like that. But it's certainly different for those of you that are with him in the locker room every single day.
Yeah, you know, for me personally, I just find that it's great to have somebody that can help lead a ball club, you know, especially with the younger club that we have. I think it's great to be able to motivate players and really get them to dig deep even when, you know, end of the season when you're tired and stuff like that, and how to know what to say to bring you out of maybe a slump where you've lost four games in a row, where you can just say something and kind of bring some fight back to the ball club and just you know, I think the biggest thing is just being a really good speaker and just, you know, be able to motivate the players to play hard.
Sure. Yeah, it seems like that's the one, you know, elusive quality in a manager that everyone tries to get, and sometimes it doesn't work out. Have you ever been a part of a team where you felt like the manager hasn't really had control of the locker room? You know, they talk about losing the locker room. I mean, is that really a thing that's happened that you've experienced, and then players just don't play that hard for a guy?
It's not something that I have that I've experienced personally. I've had, you know, great managers coming up through the minor leagues and everything, and we all played hard, and I didn't feel like that happened anywhere that I played so far.
Okay, interesting. Well, we've got some unfortunate news after Eric Wedge that we heard, and that's Danny Holtzman's injury. Have you talk to him? I know obviously you guys have been in the same circles a lot too. How is he doing? How is he taking the news and planning ahead for what now could be 2015?
You know, I'm not sure. I just kind of wanted to give Danny some space. I know that he's going through a really hard time right now, but I'm going to be giving him a call pretty soon and just kind of checking in with him and see how he's doing. You know, it's really unfortunate to have something like that happen to a guy like him. You know, he works so hard, and you just hate to see something like that happen to a good guy like him.
It's really the unpredictable nature of baseball and pitching prospects in general. You know, it's so interesting to you know, you guys were coined as the big three, and mm-hmm. Danny was the one who is, you know, the safest and supposed to get up the fastest, and He's the last one to make it up. And Maurer was the guy that got the call first, and he wasn't even a part of the big three. It's so interesting to see how everything has gone by. But it's great to have you three up here and looking forward to the future. So now we get into the off season, and there's going to be trade rumors. And certainly your name is going to come up in some trade rumors. I think you know that as a young, cheap, talented pitcher. People are going to dangle your name around some trade rumors. Do you pay attention to it? I know some people just say, oh, I don't pay attention to it at all. But me personally, I feel like I'd be looking at MLB trade rumors every day. I'd be thinking, I'd get totally neurotic about it. I'd overthink it. What about you?
Yeah, you know, I really don't get into that stuff too much. I have buddies that'll, you know, be all over it and say something to me, and I'll just kind of laugh and say, you know, there's a new rumor every week. So if you look into everyone, and you're just going to be spending your whole time on the computer. And, you know, it's the same thing every off season. There's trade rumors, all kinds of stuff going on. And, you know, until it finally happens, I'm still, you know, a Seattle Mariner, and I'm ready to fight for this team.
All right. That being said, if you were to get traded this offseason, would it be a pretty big disappointment to you, or do you think you just kind of pack it up and move on and get excited for the next opportunity?
You know, I'm not sure how I feel about it. I love playing in Seattle. I'm real close to home. I'm able to have family come watch and stuff, and I love the city of Seattle. And I'd love to, help bring this team back to being a really competitive team in the AL West, and I think that'd be a special thing to be a part of.
Yeah.
But baseball's a business, and if it's something that they decide to do, then it is what it is, and I just gotta, you know, deal with it.
Well, I'll tell you, we've been working pretty hard on our off-season plan for the website, and it includes free agents and trades and things like that, and you are not traded in the in the off-season plan. You and Taiwan are both Mariners through and through, so not that that matters on a fake blog website, but you know, we're working on it, so
sounds good.
So I talked a couple weeks ago to Chris Harris with the broadcaster for the Jackson Generals, and earlier this year we talked to Aaron Goldsmith as well, and they kind of shared some of their minor league stories and hilarious things that happened in the minors. And one thing that Aaron Goldsmith talked about, and I also talked to Chris about, was the food on the road is just abysmal, and that you're just eating in chain restaurants and stuff like that. Aaron said he can't ever look at a Subway again. He can't ever go to Subway again.
Oh yeah, time in the Subway minors. Has been way overused by many of us.
Do you have any things that you just don't ever want to do again, or any restaurants that you don't want to see again that you've been to on the road?
You know, I always try to like mix it up. Like when we were at restaurants, like I wouldn't get the same thing at Subway every time. I'd try to get something different all the time. So I can still do Subway every once in a while. But it's more those places where you go into a town you don't really know too well, and you go to a restaurant and it's just terrible.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, those are the places where you just gotta shake your head and get out, because there's, I don't know, some of the places you could go in the minor leagues, just don't do it for me.
Yeah. Chris mentioned Cracker Barrel as a place that he's just so sick of.
Yes. Cracker Barrel. We did Cracker Barrel a lot in college too, actually, on our road
trips. Yeah, so. Kentucky. You've spent a lot of time in that region, huh?
I did. I've spent a lot of time in the Southeast, so I've had my fair share of Cracker Barrel, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Kentucky, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, I know it's been a couple of years since it's all happened, but the whole, you know, saga with you and fighting with the NCAA and things like that, that's in the past. But I'm more kind of interested to hear about what your experience was like in that year between being drafted by the Blue Jays and then doing independent ball and then going back into the draft process as well, because that's kind of a unique experience that a lot of players don't go through. So what was that like, and who were kind of the people that you were playing with in independent ball and that whole experience?
You know, it was an interesting experience. I left Kentucky and went to California to train at BSTI to kind of, you know, keep my body going, throw bullpens, that kind of thing. Because the independent ball season didn't actually start until, I think, May, I only got about a month of pitching in before the draft. So that was, you know, kind of tough. You know, you're kind of getting your season started and not exactly in mid-season form when the draft is coming around. Mm-hmm. So that was a little bit different. But, I got to meet some great people and guys that had AAA experience, a couple of guys that played in the big leagues, and they were all kind of telling me what to expect in the minor leagues and trying to give me a few tips and stuff like that. So I thought that was the best part of that, was being able to meet people like that and be able to give me that help.
Yeah, come into the minors with already a little bit of knowledge of what to expect.
Yeah, veteran guys have been around, kind of, you know, giving me some things to, you know, make it so I don't make them the same mistakes as they had in the past or something like that.
So going through the draft process a second time with Seattle, I'm going to assume things went a lot more smoothly than they went the first time around.
Yeah. It was good. You know, we did take some time to negotiate, and I, you know, signed just before spring training. But, you know, I'm real happy with how Seattle's treated me, and, you know, just glad to be where I am right now.
Sure. How stressful of a process is that, where you're in negotiations and you're kind of putting faith in the hands of your agency and going through things like that and not really knowing what the future is going to be or exactly what the agreement's going to be like?
Yeah, you know, it's not easy, but I'm very confident in you know, in Scott's abilities and what he's saying and what he thinks and all that kind of stuff. And I also, you know, believe in myself and what I deserve. And I feel like we were able to get to that point where I thought it was fair. And you know, it's just one of those things that you have to be able to handle. Some people would definitely crumble.
Yeah.
But I feel like, you know, with the experiences that I've had so far in my young career, it's kind of toughened me up a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, you've taken a different path than a lot of people to get to this point. Well, with how you kind of finished the year, and obviously, I mean, your major league performance this year was fantastic. I would assume that you're happy with how things went to finish the year after, you know, AAA was... I mean, you were better in the bigs than you were in AAA. Why do you think that happened? You just think you're just kind of ramped up, pumped up, or are you just hitting your stride at the end of the year?
You know, I think that part of the deal was when I got to the big leagues, the atmosphere just kind of upped the intensity that much more and gave me a little bit more of a adrenaline boost, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I was just so locked in and so focused. You know, I feel like my last couple of months in AAA, I was starting to kind of pull it together, had some good games, you know, a couple of bad ones sprinkled in there. Early in the season in AAA, I was just kind of trying to figure out the AAA level. And I feel like it took me some time to do that. But once I did, I started putting it together towards the end and working on things. And then I was able to take that to the big leagues, you know, and just focus a little bit more, and was able to kind of have things click for me.
Sure. For you, what was the biggest difference between AA and AAA and the adjustments that needed to be made?
Biggest thing was the approach of the hitters. There's a lot of hitters that had a better approach in AAA than AA. You know, AA, they're going to chase more. Mm-hmm. They're going to get themselves in bad counts a lot easier. These guys are the guys that, you know, go up there, you know, if they think they can't hit the curveball or not throwing for a strike, they're just going to take it instead of swinging at the ones in the dirt or swinging at something close. Mm-hmm. They'd rather take the marginal curveball and wait for me to throw a fastball, that kind of thing.
Right.
So just learning how to pitch those guys and also really being able to use my changeup more effectively was huge for me.
Now going forward into spring training this year, what are the things that you feel like you've really got to work on the most? I mean, as far as command or certain pitches that you want to perfect a little bit more, have you ever thought about adding another pitch to the arsenal?
Well, at the end of the year, I started throwing my cutter. Mm-hmm. And I think that'll be an important pitch for me to throw. You know, overall, just consistency and fastball command is always something you got to work on. And really being able to throw my changeup consistently at the bottom of the zone is going to be really important for me, I think. And, you know, if I can get the fastball command and be able to keep my changeup at the bottom of the strike zone when I need it and have my curveball and continue to kind of develop that cutter, I feel like it's going to be working out pretty well for me.
So next year, say you break camp and you're in the rotation, Do you feel, how many innings do you think that you can throw? Because, you know, this is kind of the time in a pitcher's career that's just coming up where they start to limit innings in the first years. How many innings do you feel that you are confident that you could pitch if you stayed in the rotation the whole year? And also, do you, and as a related point, it's kind of side point, do you think that counting innings is overrated?
You know, I've always hated being taken out of ball games and had my innings cut short because, you know, I don't feel like I get tired. I feel like I get stronger as the game goes on a lot of the time. You know, because a lot of the time I'll throw my hardest fastball at the end of the game. You know, my last pitch will be my hardest pitch. Yeah. And I just feel like I'm getting more and more, you know, in the zone. As far as how many innings I can pitch, you know, I threw just shy of 170 innings this year. And I was still feeling great. Arm was feeling good. So, you know, I feel confident that I could easily throw 200 innings if I was needed to. So,
right.
You know, I feel like I can go the distance. It's not going to be a problem.
Not a problem. Not a problem for you. So yeah. You generally, along with innings, I think pitch counts is probably something that might piss you off a little bit.
Yeah. That's just the way it is, though. You know, I've had plenty of conversations, and it's just one of those things that's not going to bend. You know, I'm not going to be able to go 120, 125 like I would like to until later on in my career. Right. But that's just something I'll have to deal with. And also, it'll force me to work on my efficiency so I can get deep in the ball games and help the team win, hopefully.
Sure. Yeah, it ties back into what you're talking about, into spring training and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, man. Well, that's about all I've got for you. Have a good time in Minneapolis and down in California, and we're really looking forward to what you can do in the future. Obviously, it's super encouraging to see all the success that you've had with the Mariners, and we're excited to have you as a piece of the future.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
You bet, man. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care.
Bye.